On this 28th day of December 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 29, entitled Bhakti Yoga, text number 1. We'll first read the chapter summary. Thinking that the previously described spiritual practice based on detachment is too difficult, Uddhava inquired about an easier method. In reply, Lord Sri Krishna gave brief instructions on devotional service. The fruitive workers and mystic yogis, who are bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and puffed up by their false identifications, refuse to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. But the swan-like men, those who know how to discriminate between the essential and non-essential, always take shelter at the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord Himself, within the living entity as the Chaitya Guru, and without as the spiritual master who teaches by example, eradicates all the misfortune of the spirit soul and reveals His own personal form. The Lord reveals His own personal form. One should execute all duties for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, keeping one's mind absorbed in Him. One should take advantage of the sacred abodes of the Lord, where His devotees reside, and one should serve the Lord and celebrate the festivals and holidays in His honor. By understanding all living beings to be Lord Krishna's place of residence, one can attain the ability to see equally everywhere, and thus all faulty qualities of envy, false ego, and so on will be removed. Bearing this in mind, the devotee should give up his proud relatives, his separatist outlook, and his mundane embarrassment, and should offer obeisances flat on the ground to all, even the dogs and the outcasts. As long as one has not learned to see the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all creatures, he must continue to use his body, mind, and speech to worship the Supreme Lord in that manner of offering full obeisances to all. Because this eternal process of devotional service to the Supreme Lord is transcendental and has been established by the Lord Himself, it can never, to the slightest extent, be defeated or prove fruitless. When one offers himself completely to the Supreme Lord with exclusive devotion, the Lord becomes particularly pleased, and thus the devotee achieves immortality, becoming qualified to obtain opulence equal to that of the Lord. After receiving these instructions, Sri Uddhava went to Bhadraka Ashram in pursuance of Lord Krishna's order. And by perfectly carrying out the instructions of the Supreme Lord, he attained the Lord's transcendental abode. By faithfully serving these instructions spoken by the Personality of Godhead to Uddhava, the greatest of devotees, the entire world can become liberated. Sri Uddhava Vacha,
Sri Uddhava Vacha,
Sudustadam imam manye,
Sudustadam imam manye,
Yogacharyam anatmanaha,
Yogacharyam anatmanaha,
Yatandisa puman siddhyet,
Yatandisa puman siddhyet,
Tanme bru yandisachuta,
Tanme bru yandisachuta,
Sudustadam imam manye,
Sudustadam imam manye,
Yogacharyam anatmanaha,
Yogacharyam anatmanaha,
Yathandisa puman siddhyet,
Yathandisa puman siddhyet,
Tanme bru yanjasachuta,
Tanme bru yanjasachuta.
Translation. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, I fear that the method of yoga described by you is very difficult for one who cannot control his mind. Therefore, please explain to me in simple terms how someone can more easily execute it." No purport, I'll keep reading. Prayasa pundarikaksa yunjanto yogino manaha vishidant asamadhanan mano nigrahakarshitaha. O Lord, aside, Lord. Generally, those yogis who try to steady the mind experience frustration because of their inability to perfect the state of trance. Thus, they weary in their attempt to bring the mind under control. Without the shelter of the Supreme Lord, a yogi easily becomes discouraged in the difficult task of fixing his mind on the Lord. Text 3. Atat ananda dugham padambujam hamsa shayeran adavinda lochana Sukam nu vishvesh vada yoga karma bis tan mahayani vihita namaninaha. Therefore, O Lotus Eyed Lord of the universe, swan-like men happily take shelter of your lotus feet, the source of all transcendental ecstasy. But those who take pride in their accomplishments in yoga and karma fail to take shelter of you and are defeated by your illusory energy. Purport. Sri Uddhava emphasizes here that one can achieve spiritual perfection simply by taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. Those who do so are called hamsa, the most discriminating human beings, since they are able to locate the actual source of spiritual happiness, the Lord's lotus feet. The word yoga karmabihi indicates that those who are attracted to or proud of achievements in the field of mystic yoga or ordinary material endeavor cannot appreciate the great advantage of obediently surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, the yogis and fruitive workers are proud of their so-called achievements and are more attracted to their own endeavor than to the Lord Himself. By humbly taking shelter of Lord Krishna, one can advance easily and quickly on the path of Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to God. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chukshurun Milatam Mena Tasmai Shri Yurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, the pure living entity originally exists in the spiritual world without any contamination. But somehow or other, we turn away from Krishna and we're immediately entrapped by Maya, by the illusory energy conducted by the modes of nature. And when we do that, we develop what's called the false ego, the false sense of self. And instead of the true sense of self, the true ego, which is I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, we have the sense that we're separate from him. We forget completely about the spiritual world, our actual nature, the Lord, his associates, and the happiness that we felt in that association. And we search for that same happiness in this world. But it's not to be attained. And we're frustrated birth after birth. But the root of the whole thing is the false ego. So what's being expressed here is that even if one takes up a process of mystic yoga, fully understanding that one is transcendental to this world, that there's birth and death, which is the source of all misery, if one takes up a process other than bhakti yoga, then one is very likely to be entrapped in the subtle variety of the false ego. These yogis, I like to tell the story, I never saw them, but I heard they exist, the yogis who come down from the Himalayas for the Kumbh Mela. And some of them, as Prabhupada says, I heard, you know, they're 200, 300 years old, they look like they're about 50, they're all naked with the ashes, you know. But they don't have that, you know, simple, blissful look of a bhakti who's been in the ashram for like 6 months or less. You know? They're very severe. And they're told, don't look in their eyes, because they'll burn you. You know, you'll get, you'll be hypnotized, or some damage will occur, you know, because they take it as an affront. Always you look at their feet, you know, you pass by. So, some years ago, I heard a story about, because there's different groups of them, you know, that amazing, just imagine in the Kumbh Mela how a city arises there. There's already Prayag, but a new city comes of millions of people. I heard a figure of 60 million, sometimes 20 million. You know, India has 1.5 billion people, and many of them know that it's said that if you bathe in the confluence of those three rivers, the Yamuna, the Ganges, and the Saraswati, at a certain time of the year, it's always in January, it's freezing, you get liberation. So everyone knows, you know, is a little familiar with the Vedic culture, the Vedic writings, that liberation is highly to be coveted, and then we're suffering in this material world. So many people come there, simple people, learned people, all kinds, in order to get in the river at that specific time. Well, you know, 20 million people can't bathe in the river at the same time. So they try to get as close as possible. But who will bathe first? That's the key. Who will actually get in there at the precise astrological moment that's most auspicious for liberation? Well, that's a value thing. So these yogis, they compete for that. You know, which group of yogis who have been in the Himalayas developing, you know, their siddhis and their longevity, who's going to actually get in there at the right time? So there was a pitched battle that took place one year between different groups of the yogis. And who's going to actually dip in that ocean, that river at the same time? And they always have a lot of army presence there, you know, to keep... Prabhupada says it's just like a big fair. A big city grows up. They have a post office. They have roads that they have a legal system and everything that's comes up, and then after some time it's dissipated. So, what is that? You know, first of all, devotees know that liberation, mukti, is a byproduct of bhakti. This is a big affront to these guys, because they're working for years to try to attain mukti, you know, and suppressing the senses, trying to root out the subtle attachments. The gross attachments are easier. You know, you go off alone somewhere, but the subtle attachments, the pride, the envy, you know, something that someone did to you this birth, or if you're really good, you're calm, you mind, you can remember previous births. You can imagine all of the affronts that happened. You know, that, yeah. So it's very difficult. And what happens is that they fail to do that. And so you have this verse, Yenye Vinvaksha Vimukta Maninas, Tvayasta Bhavada Vashuddha Buddhya, those whose consciousness is not pure, besides the bhaktas, whose consciousness is not pure, they are averse to serving your lotus feet, just as it says here. Oh Lord, this is the prayers of the demigods for Krishna in the womb. And a very few, through severe austerities. Can you imagine trying to overcome your material desires with no holy name, no prasadam, no association of devotees, no deities, just on the strength of your own mind? How difficult that would be. So only very few can rise up to the platform of Brahman. But even if they do, they fall down again because of their averse to your lotus feet. On the other hand, Bilvamangal Thakur makes it clear, you know, this famous verse, Bhakti Strayista Datada Bhagavan Nidisa Daive Nanakpaliti Divyakashwara Murti, that if I am fixed in devotional service to your lotus feet, O Lord, Siddhatada Bhagavan, then I'll get the fruit of that. Mukti? No. I'll get a vision of your beautiful adolescent form. You'll reveal yourself to me. And as far as mukti goes, mukti svayamukulitanjali sevate san. She's waiting with this in the corner with the anjali, just like we have pushpa anjali. The anjali is a mudra, you know, like this. You've seen? And in the middle there, you can have flowers or whatever. Or you have your heart. The point is you're offering something. I remember when I was working on the Bhagavatam, you know, the convention or the idiom in English is they prayed to the Lord with folded hands. But folded hands is a Western thing. That's a Christian thing. There's nothing inside, see? And the fingers are all pointing back to you. You're wanting something for yourself, see? But this mudra, you see how it's forward to the person. There's something inside there. So anyway, mukulitanjali shaiva sesman. Mukti is in the waiting for me to serve me. And as far as I need from dharma to kama, gati yaksamayak pratiksha, if I need anything of dharma or artha or kama, they're also ready to serve. The point is that these other lower purusharthas, goals of human life, they serve in the train of bhakti. Mukti comes automatically. And even in our neophyte stage, we can feel some of that, you know, because after all, what is mukti? The essence of mukti is you don't have any desire for this world. The desires are quieted. That's what's keeping you bound here. So if you don't want anything here, and you don't feel any anxiety and fear and anger and all these other things, whose root cause is karma or material desire, then you're already liberated. And that's why we have this verse probably recorded all the time, Iha yasya hari dasi, karma namana sagara, nikala shrupya vastasu, jivan mukta sa uchite. For one whose every activity of kamana manasagada, the activities of the senses, the mind, and the words, are focused on service to Krishna, then one is known as a Jivan Mukta even in this lifetime. Even without leaving the body, you're liberated. What to speak of after death, you see. So the point is that Bhakti Yoga begins with the attack on, if you will, or the reformation of the false ego. Just bowing down in the temple. That's not such an easy thing, right? So many people are averse to bowing. They don't want to bow down to anybody, you know. Prabhupada once had a conversation after a lecture. I guess all the devotees were bowing down, and one guest, I think it was in San Francisco, the early day, says, I don't think I should bow down to anybody. You know, Prabhupada's arguing. You don't want to bow down? You'll have to bow down. At the time of death, everybody just lies down, right? Either in the hospital bed or in the coffin or whatever. You eventually get horizontal some way or another. So time, Krishna's unstoppable energy, will force you to bow down. So why not bow down voluntarily for your ultimate benefit rather than kicking and screaming and just being laid out? And that'll, you know, then you have to come back because your false ego is still there. So that bowing down, that becomes a central practice here. It's quite remarkable. The Krishna says, if one bows down to everything, even the dogs and the insects, you know, this is the best process of devotion. So what does that mean? Of course, you know, the chanting of the holy name and all these things. But the central point here is the Trinada Pisuni Chena mood, is the mood that I'm helpless here. I'm beset by so many, difficulties, inebrieties, Prabhupada called them. You know, I don't know, first of all, I don't know what the source of my problems are. You know I have problems. I have no idea what questions to ask. Sanatana Goswami said that. Will you please help me ask the right questions? What to speak of the answers? And so, in this state, we're approaching the Lord and His pure representatives, and please instruct me. Please, you know, give me shelter. This idea of shelter means that I need shelter, that I'm helpless, I can't do it on my own. The big yogis, tapasvis, they're all, you know, I got this tapasvi power. You undergo severe austerities, and you get certain tejas from that. You get certain power. But that power easily goes to your head without understanding that you're infinitesimal, insignificant in comparison to the Supreme Lord. If you don't have a clear conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you easily get bewildered by whatever power you develop. You may be living, you know, on nothing in the Himalayas, but breathing air, you know, with a loincloth, but the pride factor is huge, you know, because, yeah, you know, I'm so old, I'm liberated now, you know, and I've got these siddhis, and I'm working on more, you know. You can see, it's just like accumulating money or something, you know. So therefore, we're looking for it looks like an easy way, and it is easy. That's why we can do it. Come on, we can't really, you know, do yoga. But we can do it. But why is it easy, easier for us? Because we've been battered around the head by the material energy and we realize we're helpless. So this, I always like this, the last should be first and the first should be last in the Bible. So that's the advantage of this Kali Yuga, provided one comes in touch with Lord Chaitanya's movement. Otherwise, you know, even the pauper is proud of his penny. Pride can be, you know, in anything. People don't understand. But if we come in touch with real sadhus and devotees, then it's much easier for us to be humble. Because we have so much to be humble about. Right? You know? I think it was Churchill who said that about somebody. But it's true. And therefore, this process, and this is what draws the Lord out, you know, it draws His attention. Humble service to the pure devotees, you know, humble service to Him. That's why Lord Brahma is, you know, the original created being. He has four heads. He's so powerful. And he was a little bewildered by Krishna's arrangement in the 13th chapter of the 10th canto. He couldn't understand how this little child in Vrindavan, you know, with a little flute and his calves and playing with the boys, is actually his master, his lord, the source of everything. And so he tested Krishna's powers stealing and putting to mystic sleep his calves and his boys, seeing what Krishna could do. So Krishna manifested a whole new set of calves and boys and just went on playing. And then Brahma comes back after a moment of his time. He's thinking, oh, maybe I made a mistake. And he sees that, and he's puzzled. So what happened? The boys are over here in a cave, wherever he kept them. And the cows are over there. The calves are there. But here's a whole new set of boys and calves. And he's like, he couldn't compute. So he comes down, and then he sees all the calves and boys. They turn into Vishnu forms, and they're being worshipped by everything else. And they're covered in tulsi manjaris, garlands, you know. And now he's really puzzled. Now he's really getting, he's like stunned in ecstasy. So he bows down repeatedly, and then he gets up, and in tears in his eyes, he offers prayers. Now this is Brahma. Brahma is known as Vidhi. He's the Adi Kavi, the original wise person in the universe. And yet he says right there, Gyane Piyasamo Dapasyanamam Daheva Jivan Disanmukaditam Babadevad. That one has to give up one's efforts on one's own to acquire knowledge. Gyane Piyasam. And that includes also mystic cities and all these things. Just give that up and surrender. Namanta Eva. And to what? To hearing the transcendental vibrations coming from the mouth of the pure devotees. Sanmukaditam Babadiyavartam. What are they going to vibrate? Talks about Krishna. News. This word vartam can mean news. What is it in the Bible? Gospel. Gospel means good news, right? So that's what we're hearing. You know, we hear the transcendental vibrations coming from pure devotees. From Prabhupada, from all the personalities appearing in this Bhagavatam, Krishna himself, Uddhava, right? This is, we're hearing that, if we hear properly. And how should we hear? You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go to the Himalayas, take sannyasa or anything. Stanley Siddhartha, whatever position you're in, add this. But there's a quality to the hearing. Shudigatam, the path of hearing, tonovan manobir. You have to serve these vibrations with your body, mind, and words. That means when you hear an instruction, you have to carry it out physically. And you have to repeat them, and you have to think about them. You have to use your intelligence to understand, discuss, you know. So tonvanuman manobir. And if one lives in this way, you can conquer the unconquerable Lord. Krishna is ajita. Ajita means cannot be conquered. And yet it says, ye prayaso ajita jito. Ajita, the ajita becomes jita. Yeah. In the three worlds, this is the only way to do it. So who conquered Krishna? Yashoda. The gopis. Radharani conquers him. You know, by love. Means that he responds and he serves his servants. He says that. How does he serve them? By giving them opportunity to serve him in the way they want to. By making arrangements for them to do the service they want. Prabhupada was so desirous, as he says, of preaching, of spreading this movement, that Krishna created a miracle. This movement is a miracle. You know, this, how could it happen? That you bring this whole culture so pure into the most impure place in the world, in the middle of New York City, and, you know, preach to people who are a million miles away, who are, you know, the Ford regs are like absurd to them. You know, that's their way of life. And somehow or other, you know, the seed takes root and they grow, and the names are, the hearts are transformed, the deities are manifesting, the festivals, worldwide movement, in a matter of 10 years, basically 10 years of preaching. We could see that as a miracle. Prabhupada saw that as a miracle. That's all Krishna's blessings. You know, he almost passed away right there at the beginning in May of 67. Prabhupada said, I was meant to die. But the devotees were praying, they were chanting the Sringadeva prayers all over the movement, which was like two centers. And anyway, so we can see that Krishna responds, and that's when Krishna directly takes an interest in your spiritual advancement, that's when you can actually go forth. He doesn't care about these yogis. I mean, he cares about them as spiritual beings, but not in a personal way, because they're not devotees. They're averse to him. What to speak of the Mayavadis, who are, you know, directly blaspheming. You know. So they have a hard time, and ultimately they fail. So Uddhava says, well, let's have a, you know, give us an easy way. The word is used here. By which, I fear that the method of yoga you described is very difficult for one who cannot control his mind. Now, there are many important instructions in this chapter, just as there are in chapter 6 of the Gita for us. It's not that we just disregard the chapter 28 and go to chapter 29. But the actual method of realizing the truth in chapter 28 will be revealed now in the Bhakti Yoga section. And, you know, what Chaitanya has made it even easier, you know, made it with the chanting of the holy name. Kriteya dhyayato vishnum tretayam hijato makai dvabaram paticharyayam tato kalok tad harikirtanat. Whatever they achieved in the Satya Yuga in meditation, in the Treta Yuga with elaborate sacrifice, in the Dwapara Yuga with elaborate deity worship, we can achieve that in this age by taking full part in the Hari Kirtan, in this chanting of the Holy Name. So that's what will be described here. Not so much directly about the Holy Name, although that comes in. But the process of yoga, Bhakti Yoga, humble service, recognizing oneself as servant of the servant, you know, and being determined to stay in that mood all the time. That's one of the central points here. Okay, any discussion on these points? Oh, I just wanted to show you before I did. There's a nice section in the early 11th canto, but somehow it came up. Rupa Padmaraj was given a class and he quoted one verse, which is really sweet. It's about devotees meeting together, and it's talking about Krishna. Let's see if I can remember. Paraspadanukatanam, Pavanam Bhagavad Jisha, Mito Riti, Mitas Tushti, Nivriti, Mita Atmana. So he's describing devotees getting together and talking about Krishna. Paraspadanukatanam. What do they talk about? Bhagavad Jisha, the fame of Bhagavan, the glories of Bhagavan, which are very purifying, Pavanam. And by doing that, they develop friendly relations between each other. They become satisfied, mito tushta, this is mutually. And they also mutually develop detachment, which ends material misery. Nivritir mita atmanaha, the soul's misery. And then the next verse is a famous verse. Smaran yak smarayantas cha. Mito gauga haram harim. And then, bhaktyasam jataya bhaktya. Oh, I know. Bibrat yutpulakam tanun. The hair stand on the body. So he says, by remembering Krishna and reminding each other of Krishna, who destroys the great flood of sins in one's heart. You know, that's agha, ogha, haram, harim. Hari who destroys it. Then they develop bhakti, which develops more bhakti, which develops pure devotion. And then they start experiencing symptoms. But what's interesting is at the beginning of this chapter, which I'd like to share to you also, it leads up to the need to surrender to a bona fide guru, this famous verse, Tasmat Guru Papadyate. So he begins this section, you know, he's asked from a similar question, the same question here, by King Nimi. How can one who is deeply involved in karmic activities easily approach the Lord? So first of all, one has to see the impossibility of enjoying in the material world. So he says, see if I can remember this. I know I can remember. What's the date? Oh yes, kaman yabadananam dukkha hatyai sukhaya cha pashyet pakava paryasam mituni charinam dinam. So the mituni charinam dinam, so all the human beings who are involved in sexual activities with each other. In other words, everybody. You know, the ordinary persons who just get involved, either as a man or as a woman, you know, you take the different bodies and different births, but they'll mitini charinam. So what's the process there? So it starts out, karman yabaranaranam, so many efforts, so many fruitive efforts, activities, to do two things, to remove the miseries and increase the happiness. Dukkahatyai and sukhayacha. But one should see that in the end, pakava paryasam, the cooked result, just like we have cooking. So the mature result is just the opposite of what they had in mind. Just the opposite, right? And so, to prosecute these affairs, you have to need money. So then he says, nityarti dena vittena durlabena atmam nityuna griha patya Grihapatyapta pashubi kapriti saditaischalai. So in order to engage in these karmic affairs, you need money. But he says it always brings pain, the effort to get the money. Nityarti dana. There's pain in getting it, there's pain in keeping it, you know, and there's certainly pain in losing it. So, durlabha, very difficult to get, and the veritable death for the soul. It's a nice phrase. Atma mrityuna. And what do you get for it? He gives a little summary. Griha putyapta pashubis. You get a household, and the children, the relatives, and the animals. So you can substitute the cars, the vehicles, the insurance, all these. You know, you can make a list. And he says, where can there be any happiness? Kapriti saditais chalai. Saditais means something you get by the effort. All these things you get from great effort, which is chalitai, which are always passing away. They're being destroyed. Where can there be any permanent happiness? Now, then he speaks about the heavenly planet, because that's also a temptation. He says, okay, I know this world is temporary, but I'll go to the heaven, you know, and I'll enjoy it. And he says, evam lokam padam, something. Nashvaram, karma nirmitam, satulyatishayadhvangsam, yata mandala vartina. Okay, I forget one word. So, and the other loka, the higher lokas, are also, you have to get them from great effort, from doing a sacrifice and everything, but they're also impermanent. Nashwaram. You should see that that's also impermanent. And there's also so many difficulties there, you're competing with those equal to you, and you have envy of those higher than you. Like Indra, he's just not happy. He's always feeling that, oh, someone's challenging my authority, you know, or the demons are coming, I have to compete with them, you know what I mean? So that's also, it's just like competing with kings in this world. You know, there's really no difference. Therefore, tasmat gadumpa paddeta jigyashu shreya uttamam shabde padecha nishnatam brahman nimushamai. Prabhupada chanted this verse 1,000 times. Therefore, the therefore comes of understanding the previous verses. There's no shreya, there's no real happiness in this material world. It's all a dream, like described in chapter 28 here. So, whether it's this world or the heavenly world. Therefore, one has to approach a guru. If one is interested in the ultimate good, the ultimate happiness. Jigyashu, curious about, Shreya Uttamam, the ultimate Shreya. All right, who is that guru? Shabde Parecha Nishnatam Brahman Yubhishamashim. He's fixed, saturated in this transcendental sound. And Supreme Personality of Godhead, two aspects of the Brahmani, of the Absolute Truth, and Upashamashriyam, completely detached from material affairs and very calm and transcendent. That's the instruction of King Nimi. So that's, and then he goes on to describe the process, which is a little, you know, he emphasizes certain things for that age, but it's still basically the bhakti process. And then, within that process, he describes those first two verses, meeting together, discussing, and then he describes ecstatic symptoms, just as is described elsewhere, that will be described here in this chapter. That one develops more and more purity, and then you're always experiencing Krishna's presence. Okay, any questions on these points? We've started a little early. Yeah.
When is the next Kumbh Mela? Isn't it this year or 2012?
You know, I haven't been following. You mean like the 12-year cycle? I'm not sure. It seems like it should be coming up. 2012. Makes sense. Comments or questions?
Okay. Yeah, it was. It is 2012 because the last one was in 2000.
There you go.
You were speaking earlier about Prabhupada and the movement actually being a miracle, whereas, you know, in the beginning he should have been dead and all this, and then turned around and everything just blossomed for the most part. Kind of reminds me of how they talk about the Gangas. You can take a single drop of that water and pretty much purify any other type of water that, you know, it's just like you were saying about how he brought something pure into this impure place.
That's interesting.
Just, you know, slowly but surely it's spreading
out by the power.
Purifying everything.
And it's also like electricity. If we're good conductors, then that shakti, the bhakti shakti, to pass it on to others, and we also become able to, and that's how it spread, of course. You know, Prabhupada, you know, by his influence, he inspired faith. I was just listening this morning how faith is so important. When you hear from someone pure who has, you know, absolute faith in Krishna, then that faith can be transmitted. That's why we enjoin not to hear from the non-devotees. They cannot transmit that faith. In fact, they have the power to wreck whatever faith they have. So that's the key element. And if we become purified, we become agents of the Lord, which is our perfection, in spreading His glories and drawing others back into Krishna's lotus feet. I got a nice book when I was there. Chandra Maliswamy is there, and he's very active in the ISKCON prison ministry. And I had no idea, especially in India, how they go to these prisons in Delhi. Dina Bandhu goes, and Daivi Shakti, very old, experienced, advanced devotees, and some others. And the whole prison, you know, thousands of prisoners, and the jailers, they'll have them doing kirtan and all be dancing together.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic. And here in America and throughout the world, you know, Prabhupada started the preaching in prison before he came to America. He went to a prison, that same prison near Delhi. And he wrote a couple of letters about it. But it's been going on. And the thing about it, again, the last should be first should be last. If they find themselves attracted to Krishna, you really get into it. There's so many advanced devotees in these prisons. You can see by the letters, they have beautiful artwork that they do. I can show you this book. And every one of us, you know, we have an opportunity, we can write letters. They're all looking for correspondence. You manage, you know, you can all preach. No one has a dearth of preaching opportunity. And, you know, the books, they get books sent in there. And so even right here, I'm thinking of looking up what prisoners we have within driving range, you know, and go visiting. You can imagine how receptive they are, you know. This is like an ashram.
There are the things they don't tell you. Hardly any one of them.
I know, when they come out. Yeah, the problem, he told me that. When they come out, the problem is that suddenly that red, you know, that system isn't there, and all of these latent desires that were impurified. Cool. It's very rare that they make it, yeah. But some of them are in for life, and, you know, yeah. So they can be, you know, can become very advanced. Anyway, it's a nice engagement.
There was a fellow in L.A. who even got a machine.
I know. He died
from alcohol.
I had a personal experience when I was in Philadelphia.